from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Nearly 200,000 people living below the Orville Dam, approximately 70 miles north of Sacramento, are still under evacuation orders.
Coming up on Forum, a major report is out on what happened that led to the Orville Dam's failure last February, forcing thousands to evacuate their homes. We'll talk about what happened with the dam and what's being done to remedy the problem. And then at 10:30, the secret world of jellyfish. We'll talk to the author of Spineless, a new book on those mysterious creatures. It's coming up next after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In early February 2017, many of you may recall, in the middle of one of California's wettest winters, water officials noticed a large hole in the main spillway of the Oroville Dam. They had no choice but to continue to use the spillway at a lower capacity. But as the rain increased, it became necessary to use the untested emergency spillway, which also developed a hole, threatening to spill water from Lake Oroville, unchecked, onto the communities below. Friday, the final report on the Oroville Dam disaster was released by the independent investigators tasked with finding the cause of what went wrong and finding the cause particularly of that hole. And joining me now to talk about it is KQED's Dan Brecke, who has been following the story closely for nearly a year. Welcome, Dan.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Well, 188,000 people had to evacuate, as many recall, because the thing had gotten to the point where it was just out of control, but it could have been a far worse catastrophe. And when you read this report, there's a lot of damning that goes on and a lot of culpability.
There is. And this is something that I think everybody is looking at right now is what the Department of Water Resources is going to do, how it's going to react to the findings. So the findings are that, and to be honest, this has been telegraphed throughout the past year in piecemeal fashion by independent analysts, by this independent forensic team itself, and by the Board of Consultants, as well as by the Department of Water Resources. This structure that failed, the main concrete spillway and then the emergency spillway that you referenced that had to be used, were poorly designed. They were poorly built. They weren't built to the required specifications. And then they were poorly maintained and inspected. And
Not anchored right and cracked in many places. I mean, the maintenance was a big problem.
Well, I mean, this is one of the eye-opening things when you've spent time, as many of us have over the past year, looking at the documentation of the spillway. When you read that the very first year, even as the concrete was setting, they were noticing cracks in what turned out to be vulnerable areas of the spillway. And the first time it was used, the cracking was worse. And that's really the history of it. Throughout until its ultimate failure last February.
50-year history. I mean, essentially, weak conditions and a lack of repair and lack of durability. I mean, like I say, the report is really damning, and it even goes into an account of how the designer was kind of taken out right out of college with very little experience.
Well, you know, there's some there's some question about that detail. When you read the report and you get into that account, that comes from one person that the independent forensic team interviewed. And I've spoken to somebody who worked for DWR as an engineer back in that era on another aspect of the Oroville project, who disputes that junior level engineer even existed. So some people are feeling like maybe there's more. One of the things the report gets into is sort of a mythology that grew up in various aspects of DWR operations, Department of Water Resources operations, and its view of itself as a can-do agency. And some people feel that this account of the of this junior design engineer, who's supposed to have been had no experience at all before he drew all this up, might be another myth.
Well, one thing that's not indisputable is the fact that really literally thousands of people could have been killed.
Well, this is, if the worst had happened, they were dealing with an extremely serious situation, which is what led the county sheriff up there in Butte County to order an evacuation when he realized that DWR officials didn't really know what was going to happen in the coming hours of February 12th. And yes, listen, one thing that's occurred to me reading this report, that there's an analogy here with PG&E in San Bruno.
I was just thinking, I was going to ask you about that. There really is an analogy.
Well, and what's interesting is, I mean, we move on in a way because up at Oroville, nobody died. They began releasing water at a much higher rate through the damaged spillway. They managed to lower the lake level and avoid the disaster that they feared might happen. One of the big things that the report lacks, I think, is any it lacks teeth. There's no hammer that this independent forensic team has. The way that PG&E faced ultimately some severe public repercussions for what went wrong at San Bruno. It was found that its pipelines were extremely poorly maintained, that the construction of that pipeline that blew up was flawed from the beginning, and everything the utility was responsible for doing, even keeping records, was substandard. So ultimately, even though its relationship with the regulator, the California Public Utilities Commission, was found to be flawed and inappropriate in many ways, they faced a huge fine. They're facing severe civil penalties in court. Some people have called for criminal penalties. So what happens in the Department of Water Resources in this situation is more or less a utility. But it's a utility without an immediate regulator beyond the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
I was just
going to
ask you about that. Now, where do they come in?
Well, they have to license this facility. And the facility is a large, complex facility. It's not just the spillway. It's the dam. It's the hydropower facilities, both at the dam and downstream at a place called Thermalito. It's a series of secondary dams and canals. It's a big, big, complex thing. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has oversight because this is a hydropower structure. They have been considering relicensing this place for more than 10 years, 12 years. And this is I'm not sure, I'm making inquiries into this. They don't appear to have any, penalty beyond withholding the license. And this is something that the state legislators up there, the congressman Doug LaMalfa, and local governments and citizens groups are asking FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to do, to continue to hold up the license until DWR can prove that it's rectified all the problems identified in this investigative report that came out Friday.
We're talking this first half hour about what led to the Oroville Dam disaster that occurred in the winter of 2017. With us to help break this down in studio here, this new report on the incident, is KQED's Dan Brecke, who is editor and reporter. And we do invite our listeners, that is you, to join us. In fact, we'd like to hear your thoughts about this report, and particularly about what Dan is emphasizing here with respect to where's the teeth and where's the accountability. We'd like to hear from you now. In fact, if you have some thoughts, please bring them to the fore. This is only a half-hour segment, so now would be the time to call. Toll-free number to join us, 866-733-6786, and you can join us now at that number again, 866-733-6786, or if you have some comments or questions, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but we do want to hear your thoughts and hear what's on your mind and any questions you might have, especially or comments with respect to this report. And we've got about $500 million that's now supposed to go into repair, spillway repair?
At least.
I think
people have looked at this and looked at both the cost of the emergency recovery and the cost of rebuilding the spillway. You know, that contract was let for $275 million, and it's going to be just the rebuilding part, which is big and complicated and amazing to behold when you see it, is really expensive, and conditions were different from what the contractor believed when they went into the job. So now we're told at least $500 million. On top,
and a good deal that's going to come from the Federal Emergency Fund?
Well, the state's hope is that the Federal Emergency Management Agency will pay 75% of the cost because this is a natural disaster. Some have raised the question about whether it really is a natural disaster. Department of Water Resources has emphasized that this was due to heavy rainfall and, you know, extreme runoff conditions. Well, there was heavy rainfall and extreme runoff conditions. However, it's pretty clear from all the history, including the sort of the painstaking encyclopedic details in this investigative report, that the failure of the spillway and the use of the emergency spillway were not natural disasters in any sense. They were the product of neglect,
of human neglect.
Yeah, human neglect. And one thing that in describing the culture of the Department of Water Resources, this independent team describes them as overconfident and complacent, believing that this facility was designed and built by the best of the best, and sort of developing a word of mouth belief about everything being completely safe.
When I said the report was damning, I wasn't mincing my words, because they were not only talking about flaws in the original design and then inadequate repairs, as we've been pointing out, as you've been pointing out, but the dam operators simply not realizing how risky it was, what could happen with the spillway.
Well, you know, one of the people who's talked a lot about this in the past year and has sort of led some of the study of what went wrong up there independently is a guy from Berkeley named Robert B., professor.
Professor Emeritus. He's
right,
been on the show.
Yeah. Exactly. And one of the things that he's talked about just in terms of general engineering practices is called normalization of deviance. And what the report talks about is exactly this, that there were some conditions that deviated from the normal. So cracks should not have been thought of as normal, cracks in the spillway chute. The heavy flows from the spillway drains should not have been thought of as normal, but they were. And over time, when people saw them, they just didn't think much of it. The spillway was still operating pretty much as it always had. And the underlying erosion and deterioration was not recognized because they could patch things, and the patches appeared to keep it running the way they believed it should. So, yes, there's this is one of the really disturbing patterns, and one of the big challenges that DWR will have to face is changing that culture.
Had not heard Bob B.'s description, normalization of deviance, but it has resonance in many other areas.
It obviously does.
Culture and so forth. Let me get some callers on here, though, and let's start with you. Dan, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for appearing on today's program, because I can ask you a question that no one can answer me. 3 concrete proposals and how to fund it, how we can make it better. I'm very interested in this. I find it very confusing. 3 concrete proposals and how we can fund it, make it better.
3 concrete proposals. Okay, well, you're putting us on the spot. But I think one would be a reorganization of the Department of Water Resources to make sure that dam safety is completely independent and has a huge voice in the in how the DWR-owned facilities are run. I think in terms of the overall lessons, exhaustive inspection of all dam facilities, which DWR has actually started to order. And another proposal would be to And this is in the report, actually.
I was just going to ask you, aren't there recommendations in the report?
Well, there are lessons learned and best practices. And one of the things that they talk about is actually, trying to give the dam safety people and the engineers in the Department of Water Resources a lot more freedom to both do research, to investigate best practices in dams around the country and around the world, and to have better technical training. And the report points to bureaucratic sort of hiring HR type obstacles to all of that happening.
Let me thank Dan for his call and go right to another caller, and that's David from Sonoma. David, you're on. Good morning.
Hi. Yes, this is David. I'm working with Friends of the Eel River. We're working with FERC on relicensing of two dams on the Eel River. They're 100-year-old dams forming Lake Pillsbury and transferring water to the Russian River. And where there are known geotechnical problems for the larger dam, Scott Dam, and yet FERC refuses to allow any consideration in the public of dam safety, dam stability, inundation studies. So there's no possibility of having peer review in their normal process of the geotechnical condition of a dam that we know that there have been problems with since it was built in 1921. This is endemic to FERC. And so far, we have not been able to figure out how to get around it. FERC staff has been saying, nope, we're not going to consider dam safety. It's a 50-year relicense, and we know there are problems.
Yeah, Dan Brecky.
Well, one of the points that this report makes, and I think it's addressed to FERC specifically, is that, the investigators sort of took pains to avoid placing blame on anybody, but they said, listen, what happened here at Oroville contains lessons for every dam owner, and every regulator. And listen, I don't know enough about the situation at Lake Pillsbury or Scott Dam that you're talking about, but I think that this report is intended as a wake-up call that kind of complacency and that kind of limitation on weighing of risk is wrong and has to change. And there are specific instances in the history of Oroville where they point that out, where the process with FERC was just fatally flawed in terms of DWR providing incorrect information that they should have realized was incorrect if they had really studied what they were telling people. And but nobody was really minding the store.
Again, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Dan Brecky about the Oroville Dam disaster and the report that has come out that's been issued, actually came out on Friday. And if you have a question or comment, you are welcome to join us by phone. The toll-free number is 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. What impact do you think this report's going to have on, safety, not only with dams with respect to California, but even nationally? That's kind of what they were gearing this toward, weren't they?
Yeah, well, they want to address that to a national audience because it's recognized that we have older infrastructure, especially here in California, and dam failures are not unknown. We're coming up on the 90th anniversary of the failure of the St. Francis Dam in Southern California, which killed several hundred people. So, and there have been many more recent failures. The impact will be, solely in how aggressively, the responsible parties, and I think it's going to come down to public pressure and legislation to enact or make sure that regulations are adopted that require better construction standards, better maintenance standards, and looking at programs that actually work. I mean,
and what about inspection standards too? You know?
Yes. Well, inspection standards are a big part of it because the report talks about the limitations of inspections, but also talks about how inspections can become rather lazy and sloppy. And it calls on the use of rather common technology like ground penetrating radar to look at areas like spillways and other questionable areas that in Oroville's case was never done.
Let me bring some more of our callers on, and we go next to Babani in Sunnyvale. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question. I'm a career civil engineer working in water infrastructure. I just had a question. Structures like these are expected to have a life expectancy of about 50, 60, 70 years. Is your understanding that if they did better maintenance, we would have gotten another 10 years out of it before we had to do this, or was it already on par to get certain reinvestment that just failed prematurely?
Well, I think the conclusion is that I think the lifespan was expected to be much longer than 50 years. I mean, I think that's one basic fact. I think that the conclusion is that the problems in design and construction, especially, and then the later acceptance of the later failure to recognize how badly things were deteriorating, all dramatically shortened the lifespan of this particular structure. You know, they are building a new spillway up there where the old spillway was, and you know, this may just be bravado, but one of the guy who's leading the project says, you know, that this is going to be here. He expects it to be here 100 years from now. Construction standards have changed. I think they learned a lot from what went wrong with this. And some of the things that they were obviously doing on the site during this construction season to build the new spillway showed that, you know, in terms of cleaning rock, for instance, and making sure that they've got a good bond for the concrete, shows that they really have learned something.
Talking to Dan Brecke and talking about the Oroville Dam report, which finds that water officials were overconfident and complacent. Are we ready for big rains here if they come?
Well, that's a big question. Right now, the water level of Lake Oroville has been managed down to a very low point. It's actually about 120 feet below the point where it would need to start going down the spillway. The first season of construction, they've got the spillway, say, half done or a third done with a large temporary area in the middle that is supposed to stand up to floodwaters if any are released down the spillway. That's supposed to be able to stand up to a very large release. I think nobody wants to see any release happen. So it's very early in the season still. We'll see what happens.
Let me try to get another call in quick. David, that's you. Good morning.
Yes, hello. Let me point out that one of the big problems with these public works agencies is that, A, they're bureaucracies, and, B, no individual is held accountable for the decision that the office makes. This is the problem that exists in Berkeley, the public works department, where we had the Berkeley balcony collapse. They ignored the thing for a year when it rained, and this is the same thing that is happening that you're describing. They have no accountability. It's difficult to assess them. And it's not a collegial thing. It's a power-tripping public bureaucracy.
David, we're running out of time here, but I appreciate the comment, and I'm looking at comments coming in along those lines. Jim writes, these are all failures of government management. Quick comment from you, Dan Brecke.
I can't disagree.
Okay. We'll leave it there, and when we return, we're going to go from the Oroville Dam to jellyfish. Stay tuned.